Getting Fixed, a novel by Myrna Milani, read by Myrna Milani, all rights reserved. Chapter 9. Before Callie left for work the next morning, she called the Addison Family Health Clinic and made an appointment for Billy. The receptionist, like everyone in town, knew Billy and sympathized with her desire to have him seen as soon as possible. Nonetheless, a large conglomerate now owned the facility, and neither of their overworked physicians had an opening for 3 weeks. Callie grudgingly accepted this reality of modern medicine and made the appointment. When Billy arrived at her place that afternoon, she told him what she'd done. "I want to make sure you're all right," she signed. "Will it hurt?" "I would never let anyone hurt you, Billy." "Promise?" "Promise." During the next 3 weeks, Callie collected information from Billy and others regarding his eating habits, activity level, and any other facts that might provide some clue about the state of his health. A lot of people had noticed minor changes like she and Joe had, but nothing they couldn't easily dismiss. "Hell, he's getting old like the rest of us," joked Penn. Still, when taken all together, Callie didn't like the uneasy feeling those changes gave her. The more closely she watched Billy, the more she suspected he experienced pain, but could hide it very well. Every time she asked him about it, though, he'd look away and sign something noncommittal. When she persisted, he finally admitted, "A little." During that time, Callie also did a feline head count for the first time in months. "There are 26 cats here. I thought I only had 21. She frantically signed to Billy, "Lots of cats," Billy replied sagely. "But where are the others coming from?" Billy solemnly pointed to Gwendolyn, Sanford, and Rex. "They bring the others in for a snack," he signed. Callie had read about such nefarious feline deeds in cat magazines, but had chalked it up to the delusions known to affect cat lovers who write letters to such publications. Now, however, she knew she could grind out some pretty darn cute little kitty anecdotes herself. But the fact that she felt somewhat out of control relative to the feline population led her to dub one of Justine's previously unnamed kittens Marilyn, after David's intended. No great symbolic awareness underlay the choice of the name, except, like David's betrothed, Callie had barely acknowledged the cat's existence. The next day, Callie took Billy to the clinic where they met a physician who introduced himself as Andrew Hirsch, but everyone calls me Andy, and won them over immediately. Andy then examined Billy, said he could detect nothing specific except for some anterior abdominal pain, and recommended some tests. When those tests came back, he recommended that Callie take Billy to a larger clinic in Manchester, New Hampshire, for more tests. "What were the initial test results?" she pressed him for more details. "His pancreatic enzymes are up, but everything else is more or less normal. Still, I can't shake the feeling that something isn't right." "When everything checks out more or less normal and the patient gives you that feeling, think cancer," Callie automatically intoned. "What?" Andy's shocked expression and question made her realize that she'd spoken the dreaded word out loud. "It's something an old veterinarian taught me. You're thinking pancreatic cancer, aren't you?" Once again, she actually said the word that had lurked in the back of her mind ever since she'd started paying close attention to Billy. "Yes, but maybe I'm wrong," Andy conceded, although she could tell by his voice and the look on his face that he didn't think he was. Billy loved to ride, and by then the cooler weather that presages autumn had begun to creep into New Hampshire. This also meant that Callie could take Nana, Billy's optimum traveling companion, with them when they went to Manchester. While Nana slept contentedly in the van, Callie and Billy spent almost 6 hours in the clinic, most of it waiting for someone to collect blood or other samples and conduct other tests that seemed more related to clinic policy, or perhaps money-making, than actually pinning down any diagnosis. Callie found it all maddening, but Billy amused himself taking pictures of an assortment of medical paraphernalia with the disposable cameras she'd gotten to distract him from any troubling events. When they finally finished, they took Nana for a walk in the park adjacent to the clinic and stopped on their way home for ice cream. While Billy fed most of his to Nana, Callie tried to answer his questions as best she could. It was an interesting commentary on the way the clinic did business that she knew little more about what was going on than a mentally impaired deaf mute. 2 weeks later, the Manchester clinic requested she bring Billy back in for a CAT scan and ultrasound, plus a biopsy. Kelly vetoed the biopsy until the other results were in, and they knew it was absolutely necessary. "We biopsy people every day," the clinic coordinator who phoned her insisted. "But you don't biopsy people like Billy Paradise every day," Kelly countered. "I don't want him anesthetized or subjected to any involved procedures unless absolutely necessary." When Kelly and Billy made their second appearance at the clinic, technicians in different departments tried to leave Kelly in various waiting rooms, saying they'd call her when they finished with Billy. "If I can't be with him throughout the entire test, I intend to be the last person Billy sees before you start and the first person he sees when you finish," she told them firmly. "But my way or no way," she would interrupt them. They looked at Billy clinging to her hand, and every one of them allowed her to stay. And then Callie and Billy returned to Addison and waited some more. While they waited to hear from the clinic, Callie and Billy stenciled her office walls. She used the same simple leaf design she used in the living room, but this time they executed it in shades of blue, because blue was Billy's favorite color. Billy would apply the light base coat, and then Callie would add the darker shading. "We must name all of the cats," she signed when they took one of their increasingly frequent breaks. "Why?" "Because everyone needs a name." "Are you going crazy?" Billy smiled. "That too. And I need some order in my life," she laughed as she signed her reply. He followed her into the pantry that they'd converted into a laundry room and helped her transfer a load of wet cat bedding from the washer to the dryer. When she turned on the dryer, an ominous muffled thump emanated from within. They immediately retrieved one of Alicia's unnamed kittens, somewhat dizzy, but nonetheless for wear. Billy pointed to the name on the dryer. "Name him that." And so the kitten became Maytag. A few days later, Maytag was sitting on Callie's lap when an unnamed person from the Manchester clinic called to say that Billy's test results were in and that the doctor wanted to talk to her. When she asked the doctor's name, she immediately forgot it. All she heard was the word oncologist. Callie took the first appointment, and a week later, she, Billy, and Nana made the drive to Manchester again. When she announced their arrival to the receptionist in the designated medical suite, this time she was told that Billy should wait in the waiting room rather than she. "No," she replied, "he has a right to hear his own results." "But he's deaf, mute, mentally incompetent?" Callie finished the woman's sentiment for her. "Maybe, but he still has a right to be there." The receptionist disappeared, and Billy leafed through magazines, looking at pictures while Callie fought the feeling that whatever she was about to hear, she wouldn't like it. After what seemed like years, the receptionist reappeared and announced that the doctor would see them in his office. "Are you sure you want him here for this?" The oncologist's question, his failure to introduce himself, and his treating Billy like an object irritated Callie immensely. "He stays," she said flatly. "We are here to talk about his life, aren't we?" Perhaps because she challenged him, the physician didn't pull any punches. "He has pancreatic cancer. With aggressive treatment starting immediately, he might have a year or two. Here's the schedule I've set up. We'll start the day after tomorrow." Callie grabbed Billy's hand to steady herself when she felt the color drain from her face. "And without treatment?" She could barely choke out the words. 6, 7 months at most, but that's not an option," he snapped. "Maybe not for you, but it may be for him," she replied. "We'll get back to you after we discuss it." "You're in denial, Ms. He rummaged through the papers in front of him. "Ms. Shackelford, there are no options." "It's Dr. Shackelford, doctor, and we do have options, even if you don't." "He'll die without treatment." "He'll die with it, too. He has a right to make up his mind how he wants to die." "But he's... Please don't tell me he's mentally incompetent," she looked at him squarely. "I know he has limitations, and so does he, but he understands a lot, too." "I'm one of the best oncologists in the business," he reminded her coldly. "I'm not questioning your ability to treat cancer," she replied as she got up from her chair. I'm questioning your ability to treat people. Billy, Nana, and Callie stopped for ice cream and Billy took more pictures. Then, while he and Nana licked his cone, Callie borrowed his camera and took one of the two of them. She always knew how very dear they were to her, but as she looked through the lens of Billy's camera, she suddenly realized how fragile they both had become. Callie took Billy to her place, settled him in the living room with Nana, then turned all the cats loose for support while she told him what the doctor had said. During the years when they created their language, words like pancreatic and cancer had never come up, let alone malignant and metastases, or symptoms such as diarrhea, constipation, anorexia, nausea, vomiting, and dyspnea. Still, they had their small animal collection and visits to the Murray's farm as kids, plus all their experiences with the cats, so she was able to communicate a lot more than she thought she could. "Will I die?" he sighed when she finished. She nodded. "Yes." "Happy like your parents?" His question startled her, yet his expression left no doubt that he believed this to be true. "Yes," she replied, more not to upset him than because she believed this. "Good." Then he began tossing wads of crumpled paper for the cats to chase. When he noticed her still sitting there looking at him, he signed. "You want to talk about it more?" "I need to know how you feel about treatment. There are different things that we can do." "Treatment where?" He looked at her warily. "Probably in Manchester, where we were today." Even if his hands hadn't moved an inch, she could easily have read the answer in his eyes. "No, I want to stay home. Please don't send me away." She gave him the signal. "No, never." Looking obviously relieved, he then silently asked, "Will dying hurt?" "You must tell me if it does, so I can give you something to take away the pain," she replied, then put her hand on her heart. "Promise?" He put his hand on his own heart and nodded. The two of them gathered up all the cats, and after she took Billy home, she went for a walk on the beach. Rather than soothing her as usual, though, the waves only reminded her of all the unresolved issues piling up in her life. Just like the cats, no sooner did she think she'd pinned one down with a name so she could make sense of what he or she represented than another appeared. The people, the cats, and then the people again. Bernice, Howard, George, David, her ex, and now Billy. Within a matter of minutes, Callie abandoned the beach in favor of the woods and home. Once there, she called Joe to report the day's events, got his voicemail, and left a brief message. Then she turned all the cats loose again, crawled into bed with them, and opened the latest chapter of David and Marilyn's big wedding to take her mind off everything else. "My darling Callie," David began, an opening that caused Callie to cringe, "I believe I made a terrible mistake when I let you go." "Oh, shit, no." The rare swear word slipped out as Callie rapidly skimmed David's garbled post. As best she could tell, he and Marilyn had had some sort of squabble. Marilyn stormed out in a huff and hadn't spoken to him since. Callie spent the next hour stroking various cats, trying to decide what to do. "Surely it was only a lover's spat and everything's fine now, so there's no need to call him," she informed Sparky, who only burrowed deeper into her armpit. In fact, she declared to Maytag, who claimed her other armpit and appeared much more attentive, "I bet if I called David now, he'd be mortified that he wrote all that." George, being George, glared at her. "Yes, I know," she admitted. "David is a good friend, but I don't want to be his darling Callie, and I don't think I made a terrible mistake when I left California, even if I don't know why I did." George continued glaring, but a horrifying image of David making an unannounced pilgrimage to declare his love for her rather than the cat's glare caused her to pick up the phone. An immense wave of relief rolled over her when she heard his voice. "Oh, Callie, 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 darling, thank God you called," David gushed, causing her relieved heart to sink like 50 pounds of wet cat litter. "Now, David, calm down and tell me what happened," she ordered briskly. "She said horrible things about you, Callie, accused you of trying to ruin her wedding." "David, have you been drinking? What are you talking about?" She heard him take a deep breath, but she also heard ice cubes clinking in a glass. "Put down the booze and talk to me, David," she commanded. You're on the verge of throwing away the best thing that ever happened to you. Oh, Callie, you wouldn't desert me too, would you? Not me, you moron, Marilyn. You two are made for each other, she reminded him firmly. Now tell me what happened. Over the next 45 minutes, David explained how, when Marilyn raised the idea of using horse-drawn carriages to transport the wedding party from the church to the reception, and proposed contacting some local equestrians to find the best source of animals trained for formal occasions, he suggested she call Callie instead. Rather than expressing extreme gratitude for his thoughtful suggestion, she flew into a rage and told him she hated him and never wanted to see his ugly face again. When he tried to console her, she demanded to know if he'd ever had sex with Callie. Rather than noting the obvious, what did she think we did all those years we spent together? Callie asked the more neutral, what did you tell her, David? I told her you were frigid. Callie thought about that while she observed the 20-odd cats draped over her. Then she asked, and? And she ran out of the house and hasn't spoken to me since. When did all this happen, David? About a week ago, he sighed. Call her up and apologize, Callie ordered him. Tell her you love her and she was right. She should work with local people and promise never to mention my name again. But Callie, she says she hates me, he wailed. Classic PMS talk, David. All that stuff about hating you and never wanting to see your ugly face again. Call her and tell her you can't live without her. I guarantee she'll start crying and tell you she can't live without you either. Then go over there and kiss her, or whatever. You really think that'll work? He sounded incredulous, but hopeful. I'm positive. Callie gave him some more words of encouragement, hung up, turned off the phone bell, and put on the answering machine. If it didn't work, she didn't want to know about it. You've been listening to an excerpt from Getting Fixed, a novel by Myrna Milani, read by Myrna Milani. For more information about this and other books by the author, please visit mmilani.com. The song Irritations into Pearls was composed and performed by Jeff Firestone. For more information about Jeff and his music, please contact him at retromusic@verizon.net. Thanks for listening.